Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel. The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another important episode of Superhuman Radio. Today, we have two great shows planned for you. During the first hour, we're going to be joined by Stefan Guyanne, and we're going to talk about hypothalamic inflammation. I actually kind of touched on this subject yesterday with Dr. Roland Thomas, ironically, marker or mechanism of obesity pathogenesis. Then we're going to shift it up. We're going to be joined by Dr. Allison Seibecker, and we'll talk about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Is your bacteria stealing your food and poisoning you in return? It's going to be an interesting discussion, but let's get started right now with Dr. Stefan Guyanne. How you doing, Stefan?
I'm good. How are you, Carl?
Fantastic, fantastic. It's exciting to have you back on the show. You are a
good
fan favorite, even though you don't get on very often. Whenever you get on, someone produces a YouTube version of the interview, and it gets crazy traffic. It's just amazing.
So, really?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that.
Yeah. Okay, so first of all, there seems to be some interest in the hypothalamus. It was always understood that the hypothalamus was more like the thermostat of the body, and it was this passive apparatus, if you will, that told other more active glands like the pineal gland and the pituitary and so on to do important things. But now there's a lot of interest in the hypothalamus as well. First of all, why did you and your group start looking at it?
Well, there's actually a long history of research indicating that the hypothalamus is involved in body fat regulation. Some of the first evidence goes back to the mid-1800s, where a German physician found that one of his extremely obese patients, upon autopsy, had damage to the hypothalamus. And we now know that the hypothalamus is involved in a number of different processes that often are considered in a category called homeostatic processes. So these are basically processes where the brain is attempting to maintain the stability of some process in the body. So, for example, like you mentioned body temperature, so the hypothalamus is a sort of a thermostat for the body. It senses temperature through the skin and through internal sensors. And then it initiates responses like changing your skin capillary dilation, causing you to sweat, causing behavioral responses like putting on a sweater or getting in the shade. And so it does this for a variety of different things in the body, but body fatness is one of the main things that it regulates. So it tries to maintain the stability or homeostasis of body fat in the body. So we've known this for a long time, and why did our group get interested in this? Well, initially, long before I joined the lab, my mentor, Mike Schwartz, was studying the effects of insulin in the brain. But at the time, this was before people had identified leptin, which is the main hormone involved in body fat regulation. And he was studying the effects of insulin on the hypothalamus. So leptin is the main hormone that signals body fatness to the brain, but there are a variety of others, including insulin. And so that was kind of the path that our lab took into this. And then Mike was involved in studying the effects of leptin once it was identified in 1994, studying the effects of leptin on cell types in the hypothalamus. So basically, leptin is produced in proportion to the size of body fat stores, and it informs the brain of the amount of fat and allows it to regulate energy going into the body and energy leaving the body and other processes to maintain the stability of those stores. And so he characterized the effects of leptin on certain cell types that regulate food intake and calorie expenditure. And our recent findings that are what we're going to talk about today is that in obesity, what we see, it's not just that obese people are lean people who eat more. Obese people are actually defending body fatness at a higher level. So they defend their higher level of body fatness against changes, just like a lean person. And that's one of the main reasons why it's so difficult for obese people to lose weight. And so we're noticing that there are changes that are happening in this part of the brain, the hypothalamus, that regulates body fatness.
Well, and, okay, so let's dig a little deeper into this just for a second.
Mm-hmm.
My analogy about the hypothalamus wasn't exclusively thermic control, but we know that it listens to, pays attention to all of the hormones in the body and then tells glands and endocrine systems when to produce more, when to produce less, which makes perfect sense that it could have an effect on both the creation of body fat and the protection of body fat in this way. But is using this oversimplified analogy of a thermostat, you know, if your thermostat is broken and it actually thinks 80 degrees is 60 degrees, you have a house that's really, really hot and you're confused why you can't get it cooler because you're putting it down at 60 and thinking it's going to go to 60 and it stays at 80. Is this what's happening to the hypothalamus? Does it think that, wow, we need more body fat because our evolutionary protection mechanisms say that we have to store some body fat in the event of famine, but the hypothalamus just has the wrong set point, so to speak?
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good analogy. So just, you know, another way of looking at it would be to think about fever. So in fever, you have the body deliberately shifts your temperature to a higher level and it defends that higher level of temperature.
Right.
So just like in a fever, your hypothalamus is defending a higher level of body fatness against changes in obesity.
Okay. So now, I guess the discussion then turns to the role of inflammation. We know that inflammation plays a role in most of the chronic disease that we see in today's population. So in the paper, you investigate whether inflammation is the cause or the reaction of obesity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did you look at this? How were you able to extrapolate this or extract this information so you could determine whether or not one was the cart and one was the horse?
So before I get into that, I just want to make it clear to the readers that this was a review paper and that we didn't do all of the research that we reviewed in this paper. We did some of it, and then some of it was done by other groups. So
okay.
I don't want to take credit for everything that we talk about in this paper. But basically, there are a couple different approaches that we've used, and they're all in animal models. So these sorts of experiments are very difficult to do in humans, so we use rodents that we can manipulate genetically and et cetera. So there are a couple of different approaches that groups, including ours, have used. So I would say the most definitive evidence comes from studies showing that if you prevent inflammation in the hypothalamus, so for example, you can knock out proteins that are very important for inflammatory signaling specifically in the brain, or you can even do it specifically in the hypothalamus. When you do that and you place animals on a fattening diet, they don't get as fat.
Wow.
They don't get nearly as fat. And so we believe that it is part of the cause. And the other thing that's been noted by our group is that the inflammation that occurs in the hypothalamus happens before inflammation anywhere else in the body.
Really?
So, and that's very important because the temporal relationship is one of the things that has to be there if you want to say that one thing causes the other.
Right.
So if the inflammation in the hypothalamus occurs after they're already obese, then forget about it. It's the consequence. If it occurs before, then you can say, well, maybe it's causing it. And so that's what we see. When we put rats on these fattening diets, what we see is that within 24 hours, there are signs of inflammatory signaling in the hypothalamus, and then that continues for essentially as long as they're maintained on the diet.
Are we seeing the same type of inflammatory markers in the hypothalamus that we see throughout the rest of the body, like the reaction of prostaglandins and cyclooxygenase and that sort of thing, or does the brain have its own unique markers for inflammation?
Well, it's not identical, but it is very similar. So I'm not aware of anyone who's looked at eicosanoids specifically. I don't know, it may have been done. I'm not aware of it. However, in terms of the intracellular inflammatory pathways that are engaged and the cytokines that are released, it's fairly similar. And actually, I'm glad you brought this up because the research that's been done on hypothalamic inflammation has very much paralleled and come out of the research on insulin resistance in the periphery. So if you look in the periphery in, like, let's say muscle tissue or liver or adipose tissue, fat tissue, what you see is that when an animal becomes obese or when it lives an unhealthy lifestyle in any other type of ways, you see this increase in signaling through these inflammatory pathways like NF-kappa B, June kinase, you see a release of cytokines, you see the activation of these very characteristic pathways that when you block them, you don't get insulin resistance. So similarly, in the hypothalamus, you get the engagement of these same pathways, and they also block insulin signaling, but crucially, they block leptin signaling as well.
Wow.
So the animal, for the same amount of leptin and for the same amount of fat mass, doesn't really hear it as well and thinks that it has less fat than it does. And that's how it comes about that it can defend a higher level of body fatness.
You know, it's really interesting, and we have to take a break. For a long time, I've been, when discussing cellular inflammation in general with individuals where, you know, I'm just having a chat with them, I've said, think of inflammation as noise. So if you're in a really noisy room, in order to communicate to the person next to you, you have to yell, you know, you have to raise your voice. Now imagine the noise is so loud that you can no longer communicate with that person. And this is what happens when chronic inflammation occurs and cells become dysregulated because they can't communicate any longer. And that oversimplified, you know, analogy is starting to look like it's truer and truer as we move forward. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we've got lots of good questions. We're talking with Dr. Stefan Guyanet. We're talking about the role of hypothalamic inflammation and its effect on the obesogenic model. And this is really exciting because what this means is if we can get back to the first domino that tips and learn how to untip it or even not to tip it in the first place, this seems to be possibly the most exciting area of dealing with obesity that I've heard so far. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's Carl Lenore.
The brainless people at the FDA need to be convinced that arsenic is not good for humans to consume. Because the FDA feels a little bit more research needs to be done before we're considered that this particular arsenic is dangerous.
Only on Superhuman Radio.
Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R. You already know that Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein powder from Amish grass pasture-fed cows right here in the United States. Well, it's their second anniversary bonanza sale. Now you can get any number of 5-pound jugs of vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, or plain and save 20% when you use the coupon code ANNIV20. There's never anything artificial in Whey Natural USA. Sweetened with stevia and real cocoa, strawberry, or vanilla bean. It's the best, period. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the product you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest Protein Bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest Bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest Bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
She take my money.
Work it, make it, do it. Makes us all the better, faster, stronger. Work it, make it better, do it faster. Makes us stronger, all the
there he is, Kanye. Gonna take Bruce Jenner's place on Keeping Up with the Kardashians pretty soon. Okay, we're talking with Dr. Stephan Guyane. We're talking about hypothalamic inflammation. And this is really exciting to me, Stephan. I mean, I'm thinking about this. I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, if this happens first, if this is the first domino in the obesogenic model, then we have something unequivocally to go, okay, if we focus on this, we'll have great results with at least the majority of people. I've come to a conclusion about the brain. And please, I'm asking you to opine on what I'm about to say.
Mm-hmm.
We've learned now that the brain does not depend on the rest of the body for much other than perhaps glucose and ketones, depending on which state you're in at the time, for energy. It produces its own hormones on demand. Now we know it produces its own insulin on demand. It's kind of like a microcosm of its own, and it's shielded, at least to some great degree, by the blood-brain barrier. This mystical Chinese wall, if you will, that keeps everything that is harmful to the brain out and only lets things that are good for the brain in. But obviously, something is happening if inflammation is occurring in the brain. And I've come to this conclusion that the brain and the blood-brain barrier pay attention and may even to some degree mimic what it sees on the other side of that wall. As opposed to having an intrinsic infiltrative influence, it has a mimicry influence. So it sees that, like we've been discussing a lot, how GABA in all the research appears not to pass through the blood-brain barrier, but yet some people have, GABA receptor activation similar to mm-hmm. that of drugs and fall asleep from GABA. Well, if it's not getting through to the brain, then what is the brain doing with the ingested GABA to make you sleepy? It could be that the brain, in order to stay in sync, mimics things that it sees on the other side of the wall. And if that's the case, is there any evidence that, I guess this is a really long way around, to say, is there evidence that the pro-inflammatory diet is actually breaching the blood-brain barrier, or is the brain mimicking the inflammation it sees on the other side?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't know the answer, and I don't think anyone knows the answer to that. There's a lot of active research right now trying to understand how inflammation gets from the periphery into the brain. Is it that you have inflammatory cytokines that are circulating, that are actually getting transported? Are they getting sensed by the blood-brain barrier? Is there a signal that's transduced? Are there neurons that are actually penetrating across the blood-brain barrier and sensing things occurring in the blood? We know that there are neurons. For example, in the hypothalamus, in the nucleus that we focus on, the arcuate nucleus, there are neurons that can directly sense what's going on in the blood. So they can sense those satiety hormones that are circulating and other things like that. This is a really active area of research, and it's not just in the field of obesity. It's also in the field of inflammation related to sickness. So, for example, cancer cachexia, where people lose a bunch of weight and lose their appetite due to cancer, or just when people don't want to eat during an illness like the flu or cold, that's related to inflammatory signals that are reaching the brain somehow, and we're not quite sure how. So there's a lot of ongoing research on that, and a lot of question marks remaining. And interestingly, you know, it's funny because there's this paradox here, because when you have an extreme inflammatory stimulus like cancer or even like a cold or flu, it shuts down your appetite. However, in obesity, what we're seeing is this very low-grade chronic inflammation that actually increases your appetite. So it seems to have very different effects, whether it's a strong acute stimulus or whether it's a prolonged chronic stimulus.
I was just going to say, in my humble opinion, it's the prolonged part. And the reason I say that is at AHS 13, we sat through a fantastic lecture about how chronic inflammation can actually cause clinical depression. And it's because the body is reacting. Of course, the body knows it's sick. It wants you to lay down. It wants you to use less energy so that it can get better. But it doesn't get better. So depression, clinical depression, is the onset. And when we think about this, you know, it could be that the body's going, well, let's adapt to this environment and let's go ahead and increase caloric intake. Maybe that'll fix the problem and we'll get better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, certainly, there seem to be certain processes that occur in the brain and the body that are adaptive responses to injury initially and then end up becoming potentially negative in the long term. And this is something that's been seen in neurodegenerative disease, for example. If you look at Alzheimer's disease research, there's evidence that reaction by non-neuronal cells in the brain, such as microglia and astrocytes, is protective at first, and then it can become damaging in the long term as this inflammatory process goes on and on and on. It's basically, it's a defensive and it's a healing response, but when it continues and it never resolves, then it can end up becoming damaging. And that's one of the things that we think is happening in our models. So when we look at this process, what we see is this kind of phasic response in certain ways.
Mm-hmm.
So the inflammatory markers go up right away, and then very quickly we see an increase in activation of the cell type called astrocytes, which is one of the support cell types in the brain. And those are a cell type that responds to injury and mounts this sort of protective response. But interestingly, what we see is that once those astrocytes and another cell type called microglia, and that's the resident immune cell of the brain, once those become activated, the inflammatory signaling actually goes away for a while once those cells become activated, as if they were resolving the inflammatory insult. But then over the long term, those cells become more and more activated, and the inflammatory signaling comes back. So we think that we hypothesize, this has to be tested, but we hypothesize based on this temporal relationship that these cells are resolving the inflammation initially, and that eventually as is seen in other types of brain insult models, it gets out of control and it becomes a negative stimulus. And I want to mention too,
please.
I didn't get around to this earlier, but I want to mention that our data have also suggested that a similar process is occurring in humans. So we know from previous research that humans are indeed leptin resistant. They're not hearing the leptin very well. And when you take an obese person and cause them to lose weight, they have the same suite of reactions that a lean person has when they lose weight. So their thyroid hormone goes down, their muscular efficiency increases, so they're burning fewer calories. Their hunger goes up, their interest in food goes up, and you can see it on an MRI, functional MRI of the brain. You show them images of food in the weight-reduced state, and their brain goes crazy. But if you replace their leptin levels back to the pre-weight loss level, it almost completely normalizes all of those things. So it's like that reduction in leptin, even though their leptin's still higher than a lean person, that reduction in leptin really signals the brain that the person is starving, even though they're not. And what we've seen in humans is that when you look by MRI, you can see signs of the same cellular inflammatory process happening in the hypothalamus of humans. So we haven't been able to look in a manner that's as detailed as we have in animals, but we see evidence of, specifically in obese people, that this inflammatory process is occurring in the hypothalamus of live humans.
I want to throw something at you before we go into this break. So we did a show not too long ago on snoring and apnea in young
mm-hmm.
children and how it leads to ADHD. And the doctor that I had on the show talked about the discovery of some sort of branch of neurons that go from the nose directly to the hypothalamus. And the way he described it, it made me think of like the O2 sensor in your car that's checking to see the quality of air being pulled in and adjusting fuel accordingly, depending on how much oxygen is present and so on. Because he said that when children have these stuffed noses and they can't breathe and then they breathe through their mouths, that the turbination into the nostril actually sends signals to the hypothalamus telling them that they're breathing, you know, and blah, 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 and all this. And so when you were talking about this, I was thinking, you know, it's becoming evident to me that the nose is the Trojan horse to the brain, with intranasal insulin now being used and other intranasal drugs that they want to affect the brain. We know that we did a show with Paul, I can't think of his name now, and I apologize, about oxytocin. You know, if you inject oxytocin, it doesn't do the same thing as when you use intranasal oxytocin, it gets right to the brain.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if hypothalamic inflammation can be affected in some way by this pathway through the nose. And I'm not suggesting that, you know, people become obese because pathogens get into their nose and cause inflammation in the brain. But I'm just wondering if this is the Trojan horse, so to speak, into the brain.
Yeah, I really don't know. It's an interesting thought, and you're right that intranasal administration of both insulin and leptin is something that's being investigated with great interest right now. So intranasal insulin, I think, as far as I'm aware, most of the research is being done on Alzheimer's disease.
Right.
Because the brain during Alzheimer's disease, one of the characteristic features is a reduction of glucose metabolism and a massive reduction in insulin signaling.
Right.
So basically trying to restore that insulin signaling to the brain is a promising therapeutic avenue for Alzheimer's disease. And then leptin, obviously, the problem with leptin therapy for obese people is if you give it peripherally, their leptin is already so high, it's not necessarily really getting into the brain.
Right.
And so when you give obese people leptin therapy, not much happens. But if you can give it intranasally, if you can get it into the brain in sufficient quantity, it's possible that you might be able to have a more effective therapeutic there. So that's something that's currently under study.
Let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I've got lots more questions. We're talking with Dr. Stefan Guyanet. We're talking about how hypothalamic inflammation can lead to obesity. This is an exciting discussion. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
This is one of those things I think it's going to be 30 years from now, and people are going to go, oh, damn, this didn't work out right.
He's serving up an all-you-can-eat buffet of brain food.
It's gotten worse for us who are overweight because we're now paying our fair share for things that we didn't have to before.
Get it while it's hot.
The fact that there's only 50% of the population is obese, that means the other 50% is doing something different.
You're listening to your daily dose of wisdom. Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Livon Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
You already know that Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein powder from Amish grass pasture fed cows right here in the United States. Well, it's their second anniversary bonanza sale. Now you can get any number of 5 pound jugs of vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, or plain and save 20% when you use the coupon code ANNIV20. There's never anything artificial in Whey Natural USA. Sweetened with stevia and real cocoa, strawberry, or vanilla bean. It's the best, period. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Way Natural USA banner ad today.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Leave.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Dr. Stephen Guyanet has teamed up with Dan Pardee. Saving the world from weight gain at dansplan.com. You should check it out. Very, very cool stuff going on over there. And it's free. Go to dansplan.com today. Okay. I have so many questions, and I know that probably a lot of them can't be answered yet, and they probably won't be answered till some future research is done. Okay. So Adele Musa just messaged me a research study that shows that he's sending me stuff as we speak, so it's the page. Hydrogenated vegetable fat intake during pregnancy and lactation led to hypothalamic inflammation and impaired satiety sensing in the offspring. Interesting. So what is causing the hypothalamic inflammation, in your humble opinion, Dr. Guyanet?
Yeah, that's the big question there. And I don't want to give any definitive answers because I don't think we have any definitive answers yet.
Oh, that doesn't stop any other experts. Come on. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, but I'll give you my opinion. I think that hypothalamic inflammation, I want to be clear that it's an unresolved question whether hypothalamic inflammation is the trigger that causes fat gain or whether it's a process that develops with fat gain that causes the excess fat to be defended against changes. And what I think is that it's kind of a combination of both. I think one of the main reasons people gain fat in our society is really so-called non-homeostatic eating. They're not eating because they're hungry. They're not eating because their body thinks they need energy. They're eating for other reasons. For example, they enjoy the food. The food is calorie dense. It's right in front of them. They're consuming alcohol. There's a snack right there. I think that those types of things are a major contributor to increased calorie intake. And as you get overnutrition, in other words, as your calorie intake goes up, we know that excessive calorie intake and excessive energy exposure of cells, excessive energy exposure to cells causes inflammatory pathways to be activated. So what we're proposing in the paper and what I favor is that there's kind of a vicious cycle where you have energy intake going up for whatever reason, and then that starts this inflammatory cascade, which impairs metabolic sensing of these feedback signals, and then you get further energy intake, and that you don't get that same negative feedback on calorie intake, and then you get this kind of like spiraling, cascading failure of metabolic control. So that's what I think is happening. I think it's there may be insults that directly target the hypothalamus that have nothing to do with excessive calorie intake. And I think there is a case to be made for that occurring sometimes. I think actually one of the biggest things, now we use diet primarily in our studies to make animals obese, and diet's obviously a big factor, but one of the things that's been shown to protect against the effects of a poor diet on hypothalamic inflammation is exercise. So exercise maintains leptin signaling in the hypothalamus and prevents some of these inflammatory changes, or at least attenuates it, prevents it from having as much of an effect. So I think basically there's an intersection between passive overeating and poor quality food, possibly gut dysbiosis,
Bingo.
You know, poor composition of gut flora, and then also lack of physical activity that all contribute to this process.
You know, and again, I can't take credit for this intelligence. It comes from Adele Moussa, but there apparently seems to be a relationship between endotoxins and hypothalamic, or how do you pronounce it, hypothalamic?
Hypothalamic.
Whenever you say that, I think of Haile Selassie. I don't know why, but anyway, hypothalamic inflammation. Just so happens that the next episode of the next hour of the show, we're going to talk about endotoxemia from dysbiosis and as well as overgrowth of intestinal bacteria in the small intestine. So it's interesting. I didn't plan for these two shows to kind of lend to each other, but it looks like they may. Okay, so is there anything that we can do to directly affect a reduction in hypothalamic inflammation? And the reason I ask is because just yesterday we had a doctor on named Dr. Roland Thomas, who talked about the benefits of microalgae, especially microalgae that is grown in a reactor environment as opposed to out in the potentially polluted world. And one of the things he talked about was that it's been shown to reduce inflammation in the hypothalamus. He had no idea we were going to be talking about this today. It just happened to come up. So is there anything we can do to reduce inflammation in the hypothalamus other than exercise and avoiding a pro-inflammatory diet?
Well, I was going to say eating a non-inflammatory diet and exercise. I don't know about algae. I'm not familiar with any research on that specifically. But yeah, I think eating a diet that promotes a healthy digestion and getting regular exercise, getting sleep, I would say that's probably another component.
Really? Really?
Getting good sleep. Yeah, there's more and more research emerging that sleep appears to be one of the dominant factors in promoting obesity. And so I would say sleep. And then, but the other thing is, you know, even if you're not reducing this inflammatory process, even if you don't do anything to that inflammatory process, there are also some workarounds that you can use that may help your body to descend a lower level of body fatness without actually even influencing that at all.
Okay.
And I think one of the most promising is protein. So it's been known for a long time, and you're well aware of this, as is your audience probably, that protein is an important part of many weight loss diets. And there's more and more research emerging on this, suggesting that it's not just, so protein fills you up. That's one thing. Protein is a satiating nutrient. So per unit calorie, it makes you feel fuller for longer than fat or carbohydrate. However, it also seems to have actions directly in the brain that influence the defended level of body fatness. So there are a couple of studies that have been done on this. So, for example, most of the research has focused on this amino acid, leucine. So leucine has been known for a long time to act on this intracellular energy sensor called mTOR.
Right.
So just as insulin and leptin are the energy sensors in our body in general that signal to your tissues, AMP kinase and mTOR are these energy sensors inside each cell that signal energy status to all the components inside the cell. And so mTOR is particularly sensitive to protein, and both of these proteins play an important role in the regulation of body weight through their actions in neurons in the hypothalamus. So if you give animals a high dose of leucine in their diet, or just protein in general, their hypothalamus will actually act as if it's defending a lower level of body weight. So that's been shown in animals, and the data in humans are actually quite consistent with that, very interestingly, because when you lose weight, your brain does everything it can to try to conserve energy. So it'll cut down your calorie expenditure. Your calorie expenditure will go down disproportionately to the loss of body weight. So your calorie expenditure will be lower than someone who started off at the same weight that you lost weight to.
Right, right.
And also your hunger will increase, et cetera, and your lean mass will go down. Well, what we see in these studies of high-protein weight loss diets in humans is that protein seems to prevent a lot of those things from happening. So normally you see this reduction in calorie expenditure. Well, when you put someone on a high-protein diet, you actually don't see that, or you see it a lot less than you do when someone's on a normal protein diet, and you also don't see that expected increase in appetite as much. So it's almost like the body is saying, well, you know what? We might have less signal coming through the leptin signaling pathway, but we have more signaling coming through this mTOR pathway, and those are converging ultimately on some of the same pathways that regulate appetite and regulate calorie expenditure. So the body's like, well, you know what? We lost some weight, but actually, I don't feel like I'm starving.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's interesting. We have to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want to address ketones just for a second, because obviously ketogenic diets cause people to lose body fat and to some degree preserve lean body mass and muscle. And I'm wondering if they weigh into this equation. We're talking with Dr. Stefan Guyenne. We're talking about hypothalamic inflammation and how it affects obesity and things that you can do to overcome it. Go to dansplan.com. Dr. Stefan Guyenne and Dan Party have teamed up to help you lose weight. And unlike all these other organizations that want to charge you something, you've got two guys here who are doing it and having great success, and it's all free. What's better than free? Go to dansplan.com today. We'll be right back.
He's asking the hard questions.
Where are the convictions for the drugs that are being used right now that are killing people?
The government is too afraid to answer.
You see all the attorneys. Hey, if you develop cancer after taking this supplement, call our law office because we got a class action suit coming together.
Carl Lenore.
What's wrong with you people?
On Superhuman Radio.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre-, intra-, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away.
Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit ironmaglabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinus Stain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at ironmaglabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Are you one of the 9 people in this audience that still has not switched away from toxic toothpaste to Aura MD? Get a bottle of Aura MD absolutely free. I promise you, you will never use anything else to brush your teeth ever again. And it increases the health of the oral microbiome. No fluoride, no surfactants, no poisons. A free bottle, just pay shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com. On the 21st of this month, Dr. Guyanain, we are doing a free Superhuman University seminar, streaming seminar, with Dr. Dominic D'Agostino called Ketogenic Diet for Dummies, because there's more and more interest in ketogenic diet for therapeutic purposes, cancer, seizures, so on and so forth. But it is pretty clear that if someone can get into a state of ketosis and stay there for a while, that body fat just drips away. Is there any magic in ketones feeding the brain? Does it affect, I don't know if you have this information, but do you even propose that it affects inflammation, or does something else because it's a different substrate that it fools the body, the brain, into thinking that it can stop defending its fat stores?
Yeah, it's an interesting question. You know, I don't want to give the impression that I have any definitive information on this. Ketogenic diets are not my specialty. I will say that, you know, I think there's a lot that remains unknown about ketogenic diets. So, for example, you know, people say, well, ketones are special because when you inject them directly into the brain, animals eat less, and so they must have effects on food intake. But the problem, these experiments are actually very difficult to do in a way that's informative, because the problem is that if you inject any kind of energy source like glucose lactate or anything into the brain, animals eat less. So it basically, the brain senses energy and it will cause you to eat less, fatty acids, anything.
So maybe the magic is intranasal ketones or intranasal lactate so it gets into the brain and it causes you to eat less.
Maybe so. Maybe we just need to have a chronic cannula where you can inject stuff right in the brain. So, I mean, I'm interested in this question. I think it's possible, it's plausible that something special happens when you enter a state of ketosis. So, you know, because ketosis generally, for most people, ketosis occurs when there's a shortage of food.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, full-on ketosis would occur during starvation or during extreme energy restriction, because with the exception of a few cultures like the Inuit, most cultures had enough carbohydrate in the diet to stay out of ketosis most of the time. Now, most of us may have we may have some ketones in the morning when we wake up after, you know, the extended fast of sleeping, but it's not the same level of ketones that you get when you eat a truly very low-carb ketogenic diet. That's because your body stores carbohydrate and it releases it over time. So basically, my point is, when you enter the state of ketosis, I think the body is essentially interpreting that as a starvation state, and I think it enters a mode of very different physiology than the typical mode.
Yeah, because the body's been saving all that fat just for this event, and it's going, hey, hooray, it's here, let's start using the fat we've been saving.
Maybe. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, it's true that people lose fat. I wouldn't call it miraculous. I mean, there are controlled trials that have been done on this, and basically, you know, the more you restrict carbohydrate, the more people lose weight. However, the more you restrict anything, the more people lose weight. And I will say, you know, the caveat there is that the weight loss you see on a ketogenic diet does seem to be superior to the weight loss that you would see on a very, very low fat diet, for example.
Right.
However, it remains true that, you know, you restrict anything to an extreme and you're going to get weight loss. So I think, you know, there's something probably there with the physiology. But it's not just about the physiology. I think a lot of it just has to do with the types of foods that people are eating and the psychology of it. So what happens when you take a table full of food and you take half of it off? You take all the bread off, you take the potatoes off, you take et cetera, et cetera. You're not drinking sweetened soda anymore. You're being very careful about what you're putting into your body. You're counting everything. I mean, you get very major changes in eating behavior and calorie intake when you ask someone to change their diet to that degree. I mean, you can even look at vegan diet studies where people are removing all animal products and they're being very careful, again, about what they're putting into their bodies. And even in studies where they're not really weight loss studies, people lose weight. It's just paying attention to what you're putting in your body. So I think there are probably a variety of things that go into it, and I am interested in the physiology side of it, because I think there probably is something there, but it's not easy to figure out exactly what's happening there. And is there something happening in the brain? Is there something happening to energy homeostasis systems? Maybe. Yeah, it very well could be. I think one of the things that is helpful when people go on a low carbohydrate diet is many people report that they don't, the symptoms of hunger at mealtime aren't quite as acute. So they kind of, instead of getting these periods of, you know, really wanting food around mealtime, their hunger is kind of more stable and less acute. And we don't know exactly why that happens. As a matter of fact, we know remarkably little about what hunger even is and what determines it. I mean, we know there's all these factors we've identified that suppress hunger, these satiety hormones and satiety signals that originate from the gut when you eat. But what exactly causes hunger? We really don't have any kind of definitive. There are a lot of hypotheses. There's not really any definitive explanation for it. I would say the strongest explanation is that hunger is just an absence of satiety. So basically, hunger is kind of your default state unless you've eaten something that released satiety hormones. But anyway, I think there may be something going on with carbohydrate sensing as well. Again, this hasn't really been demonstrated, but my gut feeling is that the body kind of knows that it's in a carbohydrate burning state. And it knows, because the body can't store very much carbohydrate.
Right.
So from, you know, over the course of a day, you burn almost all the carbohydrate. You burn a quantity of carbohydrate that's equal to what you ingested, basically.
Right.
That's not really a good way to put it. What I mean is that you can go through almost all of your body's carbohydrate stores in one day. Whereas for fat stores, you can't even come close.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Even a lean person, such as myself, I have enough fat stored in my body to survive for an entire month without eating a single calorie. So it's a very different scenario. There's not kind of that acute need to replenish your stores to keep fueling yourself on this energy source. And so, again, I'm speculating here, but my gut feeling is that we're going to figure something out. We're gonna eventually determine that the body prefers to have regular meal times when it's in a carbohydrate dependent state. And that doesn't necessarily mean that your total calorie intake is higher. It doesn't necessarily mean your body fat is higher. For example, I've gone through periods of eating low carb, high carb. It doesn't really affect my calorie intake or body fatness. However, When you have the body in a state where it's burning primarily fat, there's not really that need to have a regular input of energy because you're tapping into an almost unlimited source of energy in your body.
Yeah.
So again, I'm just speculating about this, and I think more research needs to be done, but I think it is consistent with the fact that people tend to not have these more acute mealtime hunger pangs when they're eating a diet that's significantly reduced in carbohydrate.
Yeah.
My guess is that that plays some role in addition to the other things that I discussed.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I want to go ahead and plug the website once more. The dansplan.com is a website where Dr. Stephan Guyenne and Dan Pardee have joined forces to help people find ways to reach their ideal weight through the Ideal Weight Program. It's completely free, and it's quite technically adept, using some really cool gadgets as well to track and manage your progress. Go to dansplan.com today to learn more. Stephan, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you very much, Carl.
Take care. All right, so stay tuned. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to pick it up, and we're going to, ironically, while the discussion is going to change, it actually dovetails nicely from what we were just talking about with hypothalamic inflammation as we are joined by Dr. Allison Seibecker, and we're going to talk about small intestine bacteria overgrowth. Is your bacteria stealing your food and poisoning you in return? That's a dirty trick. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There's something comforting about knowing he's out there.
Government is in place because it assumes that people are too stupid to care for themselves.
By your side.
Government has to take up the parental role of teaching people what to do.
Fighting the good fight.
Government has to get out of people's pantries, first of all. They can't legislate health.
He's Carl Lenore on Super Human Radio.
At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the Bio Age banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount. Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
This is the Superhuman Channel. Evolution just got kicked up a notch.
Mr. Bombastic!
Welcome back. Okay. Is your small intestinal bacteria stealing your food and poisoning you in return? Isn't that a dirty trick for something that you feed and take care of? I think so. We have Dr. Seebecker. How you doing? Dr. Allison Seebecker. How are you, Dr. Seebecker?
Hi, Carl. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, my pleasure. And this is really an intriguing discussion because I have to be honest with you. I always thought that having all of this wonderful gut bacteria throughout was really a good thing, but we're learning more and more thanks to people like you. So let's explain, first of all, what is small intestine bacterial overgrowth in the first place?
Well, what it is that, like you said, we want to have all this good bacteria throughout our gastrointestinal tract. But I think what a lot of people what a lot of people don't recognize is the difference between the small intestine and the large intestine. Where we want the good bacteria is in our large intestine. And it's great if we have lots of it there and all the good probiotics. And if we have other bacteria that's not, you know, fantastic, it's okay because the good bacteria keeps it in check. But the problem is when that good bacteria or any of the bacteria in the large intestine come up and colonize the small intestine. That's what small intestine bacterial overgrowth is. Overgrowth is just sort of another word for really colonization. So the small intestine is not supposed to have a lot of bacteria in
it. Really?
It has a little bit. Yeah, it has a little bit. The amount is rather small in the top portion of the small intestine, and it gets more and more as you get closer to
this makes perfect sense when you think about it, right? Because it's the vestibule, if you will, between the stomach and the intestines. So you would want this kind of point in the process that is devoid of all of this gut bacteria, all this bacteria, because you don't want all that really disgusting, nasty breakdown of food so close to the stomach. Is that probably why we were designed this way by nature or whoever?
Oh yeah, you're totally hitting on it. So this is exactly it. So the issue is that food comes into the stomach, we do some breakdown, and then when it goes into the small intestine, that's the place where we're supposed to digest it, break it apart, and absorb the smallest units we've now broken apart. That's digestion and absorption in the small intestine. And so if the bacteria were there, they would interfere with that process, which is exactly what they do in SIBO, in small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Because see, that's why the body keeps them out of the small intestine, so as there's no interaction with
no competition, no competition for digestion.
Exactly.
And what happens is they actually do compete for digestion, do they not? I mean, these unwanted bacteria are consuming the foods that we intend to nourish us.
That's exactly it. They totally compete. They make all the same digestive enzymes that we make. So they just secrete them or grab the food close to them and digest them just like we would have been digesting them. And then when their smallest units are broken apart, they absorb them just in where we would have. So they're stealing our food. You know, now there's a spectrum of cases. Some cases are more mild and some are more severe. In the severe cases, people are very thin and have malabsorption due to this problem. Then there's mild cases where maybe the bacteria aren't getting a chance to take away that much of the person's food.
Okay. What are some of the early signs that someone has SIBO? Is bloating one of the earliest signs? Because the interesting thing about this is I am not a fan of the Wizard of Oz. That's what we call him on this show, Dr. Oz. But just the other day, he had some doctor on telling women. I happened to be getting an MRI the other day because I tore a hamstring deadlifting. And I happened to be sitting in there, and Dr. Oz was on. And this woman came on and was telling women why they feel bloated in the end of the day. She did not talk about this phenomenon at all. Is this what causes
really
bloating?
I'm really sorry she didn't.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry she didn't, because this is, like, one of the most common ways people can have bloating, and particularly, like you just said, at the end of the day, it gets worse as the day goes on. And the reason why is because the bacteria, every time we eat a meal, they can grab a hold of some of our food, they absorb it, and their process of eating is called fermentation.
Yeah.
And so when they eat or they ferment, they make gas. And that gas physically can distend and bloat the abdomen. And so it gets worse as you go on in the day, because you eat breakfast, then you eat lunch, then you eat dinner. It's just more food, it's more gas.
Okay, so.
And so it's real bummer she didn't mention this.
Yeah, so gas is, obviously bloating and gassiness is one of the early signs that you may be suffering from this unwanted bacteria. Are there any other very, very evident telltale signs?
Yes, they're the symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome, or IBS. And those are bloating, number one, and then there's either constipation or diarrhea or a combination or mixture of the two. And then there's pain, abdominal pain.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's more just discomfort. Sometimes it's cramping. I mean, it's not like constant, horrible pain all the time. And then there can be, because of the gas that's made by the bacteria, when it exits the body, there can be excessive flatulence or belching.
Right.
And then there can also be GERD, GERD and nausea, acid reflux, gastroesophageal reflux disease, or nausea can go along with it too. Those are the common symptoms.
It's really?
Basically, it's the symptoms of IBS. Basically, for the most part, not always, but for the most part, SIBO, SIBO is IBS. There are cases where there's IBS that is not SIBO. Not all IBS is SIBO, but it's the symptoms of IBS. They have the same symptoms.
Now, when someone has SIBO, there are a host of potential diseases associated with this, including acne, ironically, and rosacea. But, I mean, several of the most prominent autoimmune disorders have been linked to SIBO, have they not?
I think some of them have.
Fibromyalgia for sure is linked to SIBO, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was one of the early links that Dr. Mark Pimentel is one of the lead researchers, and he made that link early on in, like, I think 2000. In fact, they found that he reported that the people who test the highest on their breath test, we can talk about that later, that
yes.
have the most amount of hydrogen are those with fibromyalgia. At least that was his early reporting.
And another one that is rampant, I know two people who have just been diagnosed with Hashimoto's thyroiditis.
Yeah, that's just the one I was going to bring up. Absolutely, absolutely. So the Italian researchers on SIBO, Dr. Loretano and his team, they put out an article linking hypothyroid and also just changes with the thyroid, hyper and hypo,
mm-hmm.
With SIBO, with all those symptoms of the motility changes. But in particular, Hashimoto's and hypothyroid seems to be associated. And the concept here is that, now we don't know this for sure, but the concept would be that the hypothyroid, the slowing of the motility of the gastrointestinal tract, allows the SIBO to occur. So the concept right now is that Hashimoto's
yes.
or hypothyroid would come first.
Yes, and this makes perfect sense because I actually experienced a period of time where my thyroid went haywire and I became hypothyroid, and I can tell you something that's really interesting. But your food doesn't move through your stomach. You could feel it there for hours later. You get gassy. Digestive motility just goes to a standstill when thyroid hormone is not present. And so that kind of sounds like a vicious cycle once that happens, because I would imagine that the slow movement through the digestive tract would probably make you more prone to this unlikely bacteria in your small intestine.
Absolutely. And then, like you just said, vicious cycle, because then once the bacteria gets established there, well, then they can just keep eating your food and keep growing. You know, so then you're stuck.
What, isn't it estimated that some 30 to 50% of Americans may be suffering from SIBO without knowing it, but they just take anti-GERD pills, proton pump inhibitors, and yada, yada, yada to deal with it?
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up, because I have been estimating that as a prevalence, and I think I was wrong. I think I got that number wrong because I had problematic math.
Okay.
So I'm glad I can clear it up. I still think it's a pretty darn high number. And so let me take you through the prevalence for a minute here.
Please.
We know that up to 20% of the U.S. population has IBS. That would be over 62 million people.
Wow.
Now, some say that, I know, isn't that awful? It's just awful. Those symptoms we just talked about,
yes.
constipation, diarrhea, pain, and bloating, you know, up to 20% have it. Now, some say that they believe the true prevalence of IBS is more like 10%. So I'll just go ahead and use that as being more conservative. That's a little more than 31 million people, just an astounding amount of people still. And so then you have to look at the studies that say, well, how many people with IBS have SIBO? And there's a range between 30 to 85% of people with IBS have SIBO, have been proven to have SIBO. So the average there is about 60%. So if we take that number, that brings us to about 19 million people. It's 6% of the U.S. population. But, you know, then what that number isn't taking into account is the 35 or more other diseases besides IBS, like we just talked about Hashimoto's, there's diabetes, celiac disease, inflammatory bowel disease, there's all these other diseases that are associated with SIBO, either as an underlying cause, as a coexisting disease, for whatever reason we don't know why, these diseases just happen to go together, or as a result. And so then at that point, you know, the number's got to go higher. But how much, I don't want to speculate because I realized my math was problematic.
Okay, okay.
I just want to say I think it's way more than 19 million. But does it need to be, for God's sake?
No,
if it was
a million people, that would be significant. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Exactly.
And you know what?
Yeah,
there's a lot of people
much.
Out there who live with these symptoms that never get diagnosed because they don't have time, they don't have opportunity to go to the doctor, and they just live with bloating, gassiness, and think it's part of life.
So, they don't even know. They're not supposed to be that way because they've had it for so long.
Right. They think that's just the way I am. Right. All right, we're going to do this.
Or they turn around to their neighbor and they say, well, you're like that too. So everyone's like this.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick it up on the other side. We're talking today about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth with Dr. Allison Seebecker. It's going to get really interesting because there's ways to test for this. You don't have to live with this kind of problem in the future. There's things you can do. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's keeping tabs on government health agencies.
It's called the Environmental Protection Agency.
Carl Lenore.
Where is the protection? Where is the protection?
Superhuman Radio.
Just like Carl Lenore, jumpstart your day with a liquid shot of high-dose vitamin C. Everyone is searching for that magic formula to look better and feel better. We don't claim to have a magic formula, but we do know that more than 1 million people take a shot of our high-dose vitamin C supplement every day. They're rewarding their body with an important nutrient and antioxidant that is sugar-free, gluten-free, and dairy-free. All of these benefits and no side effects. Unlike pills and powders, this high-tech bullet delivers vitamin C directly into your cells. Try Live-On Labs Vitamin C with a 100% money-back guarantee. Save $10 when you order now. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com or call 1-866-790-2107. That's 1-866-790-2107. And mention code SHRC to save $10 off each carton. Carl sees the benefits. So will you.
Are you still putting toxic toothpastes in your mouth? Still brushing with sodium lauryl sulfate, which is related to canker sores and gum recession? You've heard a lot of people in the Superhuman Nation talk about how much they love Aura MD. Carl and Elisa won't brush with anything else. Now get a free bottle of Aura MD and see what all the excitement's about. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Aura MD banner ad today. You cover shipping and we'll give you a free bottle for first-time customers only. What are you waiting for? The best toothpaste alternative is just a click away. A special offer from Rob Regish for Blueprint Power Hour listeners. Purchase 1 year of the Blueprint Bulletin and get the Blueprint 3.0 ebook for free. The first 100 subscribers will receive the Superhuman University Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms course and another surprise bonus when you order. Go to theblueprintbulletin.com today or click the Blueprint banner ad on superhumanradio.com and get on the road to Gainesville in the fast lane.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See Eye Drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. Wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Jumping higher, left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Peace up. A-Town down. Yeah.
Okay. Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Allison Seebecker. We're talking about small intestine bacterial overgrowth. Okay, so we can probably list a lot of things that may cause SIBO. I'm more interested. And we can get into that if you want to. But you know, we know that motility through the digestive tract and backing up into or getting stuck too long in the small intestine. We know that there's some foods out there that clearly have been linked to the development or at least the feeding, if you will, and the thriving of these unwanted bacteria. Let's talk about that a little bit later when we talk about things you can do about it. How can you test for SIBO?
Okay, so the main test that is available to most people in a clinic is the hydrogen methane breath test. And it's good because it's not that expensive, and it's pretty easy to do. You're just sampling your breath. And the premise this works on is that the bacteria make gas, and so we can check the gas they make, because hydrogen and methane are gases that only bacteria make. So if we can see them in the breath, we know that we as humans didn't make them. And what happens is the gas in the intestine diffuses across into the blood of the body, goes to the lungs, and then it's breathed out. And that's how we can test it. And that's a fairly quick process. So the timing is the other aspect that's important here, because what doctors are looking for when they interpret this test is to see a rise in these gases, evidence of these gases and a rise of them within the first 2 hours, which would indicate the small intestine versus the large intestine.
First 2 hours after a meal, you mean, right?
After you drink the solution. So you drink a solution, usually it's lactulose, a liquid lactulose. That is an indigestible carbohydrate, meaning that humans can't break it apart because
those little SOBs living in your small intestine.
Exactly. Exactly. They can break it apart. So it's a good test, because it's like if they broke it apart and made gas, if they're there, we'll see the gas. But after around 2 hours is probably when that lactulose solution has hit the large intestine. Then you'll definitely see a rise in gas, because everybody, for the most part, has a good amount of bacteria in their large intestine. So that's how we look at the test, is the gas and the timing of it.
Okay, so if someone goes and what is the range, how many parts per million of hydrogen or methane if it's found in the breath? What is it?
What makes a positive? Okay,
yeah,
so
yeah.
My preface to this is that there is no one set standard, and that's very frustrating for everyone involved in this process, for doctors and patients alike, because that means that each doctor can really kind of come up and use their own criteria, and one doctor might say something's positive and another might say it's negative. So unfortunately, we're still in that circumstance, but I can just tell you what the manufacturer of the breath testing machine gives us their standards, and that is 20 parts per million of hydrogen within the first 2 hours, and they like to see, what they say is, it should be a rise over the baseline sample. Baseline is the sample of your breath before you drunk the solution.
You will have some hydrogen in your breath before anyway, you're saying?
You might have a little.
Okay.
Many people have none. Many people have zero. And for the most part, you're looking to have that baseline be pretty darn low.
Right.
And then the methane would be 12 parts per million, a rise of that within the first 2 hours over baseline. Now, I myself personally don't feel that I need the rise over baseline, particularly when it comes to methane, because methane gas is associated with constipation. It seems to have an effect in slowing, it's been proven it has an effect in slowing the motility. So therefore, that is a slower gas to be moved out anyway. And it seems to me that most people would need to do, there's a prep diet needed for this test to make sure we have like a basic sampling, we're doing all the same on everyone. And so for methane gas, you'd really need to do 2 days of the prep diet, I think, to bring the baseline down low. What I see very, very commonly is that the methane gas is high on baseline and it stays high, maybe changing by about 5 parts per million the whole way through, the whole test through. So I don't need to see that rise, particularly when it comes to methane. So that's my own personal clinical experience. But like I say, doctors will be different person to person, but the basic criteria is 20 for hydrogen, 12 for methane parts per million.
And you can even get these results taken. You can do this at home, from what I understand. There's an in-home test you can do, right?
Yeah, it's really convenient. That's how most people do it. You can take a kit home from the doctor's office or the hospital or the lab or the mail order company. And so you just do it at home. It's kind of nicer to do it at home because it takes 3 hours and you have to breathe into a collection tube for your breath every 15 to 20 minutes, depending upon the company. And so it's kind of nice. You could be at home getting some work done on a weekend or, you know, with your family and do this test at home. It's quite simple. And then you just return the kit to the lab. It has to be returned within 2 weeks for it to be valid, and they analyze it.
That's really cool. Everybody should be doing this, by the way.
It's really great.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're learning so much more about how the microbiota of the digestive system is influencing so much in our body. And, you know, just the show we did before this one, we talked with Dr. Stephan Guyonnet about hypothalamic inflammation. And one of the things he talked about was endotoxemia. And guess where endotoxemia comes from? Comes from malabsorption and improper digestion in the stomach. When food is getting past you know, the digestive process and entering into the bloodstream in its, let's say, uncommuted form, and the body, and this is also what leads to autoimmune disorders. We know that, but this could lead to hypothalamic inflammation. And when we're talking about how hypothalamic inflammation causes the body to defend itself against losing fat. So it could be, and we don't know this, but there is research out there. We did show a year ago, I want to say, when we talked to the researchers who looked at the old Amish order, the microbiome of their stomach and their linkage to obesity and diabetes. And there's a lot of research out there being done that says, hey, there might be a linkage between your digestive system and the reason you become obese. It could be that what's going wrong in your small intestine is influencing your hypothalamus by causing inflammation. I mean, this is really intriguing here. Okay,
it's
so
really intriguing.
Yes. So once somebody determines that they have an overgrowth of this unwanted bacteria, is there a way to go in there and just blast them out, scorch the earth, and then and let them move on?
Absolutely. I think you can imagine that would be antibiotics. So, you know, I use three main treatment options. Well, really four. So there's diet. Now, I will just immediately say that in my experience, at least with the patients that I see who are coming to me, I'm a specialist, so I'm usually seeing patients that are a little bit more difficult to treat. For adults, diet alone does not seem to be enough to remove the bacteria out of the small intestine or to decrease their load sufficiently. I think in children, it can. And exactly why, I'm not sure. Probably because their immune systems aren't formed yet fully, and for various other reasons. But so the three other treatment methods, and by the way, I do give everyone diet, but the other three main treatment methods are antibiotics, herbal antibiotics, and elemental diet. And these three are more of the quick methods to reduce the bacteria, get that load out of there so you can start having some relief.
What is an herbal antibiotic?
So there are lots of herbs that have antibacterial activity.
Mm-hmm.
Much of the herbs that have antibacterial activity also have antifungal activity, and sometimes antiparasitic or antiviral activity.
Like oregano is one of those, right? And garlic is another one, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, and golden seal or the berberine-containing herbs. These are the heavy hitters. Cinnamon's another good one, but those are the top ones. I also like to use neem as well.
Neem, so N-E-E-M, and like Nancy?
Yes.
Oh, because Elisa sprays the plants at home with neem oil as a natural pesticide.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Cool.
So these are working, they work pretty darn well. You know, there's certainly other herbs that can be used. Those are just the ones we just mentioned are the main ones that I use. But, my experience is that, in treating people, is that they work really about the same as antibiotics in their effectiveness. I would say about the same. But it takes longer. And that's the only thing, is that, so in a 2-week course of antibiotics, it will take about 4 weeks to get that same drop in gas levels with the herbs versus the pharmaceutical antibiotics.
Okay.
It just takes a little longer.
We have to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about what is an elemental diet. And then
sure.
I'd also like to talk about, and if we can cover it in the next segment, if not the following segment, is there any evidence that a ketogenic diet may be beneficial? We know that ketones seem to starve things like cancer. Is it possible that these bacteria would die if we just didn't feed them, so to speak? We're talking right now about small intestinal bacteria overgrowth with Dr. Allison Seebecker. When we come back, we're going to talk more about what you can do about it. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
He's asking the right questions at the right time.
I don't care what side of this you're standing on, that GMO is good for us, GMO is bad for us. The truth of the matter is nobody knows the answer. Is it fair to subject this world to this experiment, which may have undeniable, unknown consequences that will be irreversible?
You're listening to Superhuman Radio with Carl Lenore.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the Bio banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount. Get a free jug of BCAA Extended Performance. That's a $26 freebie when you buy Muscle Gauge Nutrition's Intense, the safest, most effective pre-workout alternative to DMAA. Intense is designed to quickly boost focused energy in a great-tasting formula free of aspartame or ACE-K. Only half the caffeine of top-selling concentrated pre-workout formulas on the market. Intense delivers unparalleled mental focus and energy to power your workouts. Go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the Intense banner ad and use coupon code SUPER. That's S-U-P-E-R.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Allison Seebecker. We're talking about small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. We understand how to identify it. We're talking about what you can do about it. Okay, so what is an elemental diet, Dr. Seebecker?
An elemental diet is it's when nutrients are powdered, kind of broken down, pre-digested into their most absorbable form and put into a powder, kind of like vitamins and minerals. There's always vitamins and minerals in there, but then it's the main macronutrients. Protein in particular is broken down into amino acids. And then technically fat should be broken down, and so should carbohydrates, like say into glucose, but usually they don't break them fully down. They'll have a powdered oil in there, and then they'll have maltodextrin as the carbohydrate source. And so basically what it's doing is giving you everything you need to survive, your nutrients, and because it's pre-digested, it can be absorbed very quickly high up in the small intestine, hopefully before it reaches the bacteria that are overgrown, so that they will be starved. So you're fed, but the bacteria are starved. And elemental diets are used a lot in hospitals to give digestion a rest. Many gastrointestinal patients will use them at times when they're having troubles. And so these can be bought over-the-counter. They're over-the-counter products. You can get them at drugstores. And Dr. Pimentel ran a study on using Vivinex. Vivinex Plus is one elemental diet on SIBO patients, and he had excellent results. I think he had something like 85, somewhere around there, percent success at reducing this bacteria.
How long does it take to be on an elemental diet for the little bastards to die.
Exactly. It's given for 2 weeks, and then the protocol that was established is at that point you should retest. And in that scenario, you'd want to probably retest at a facility so that you can get your result immediately. As soon as the test is done, you know if you still have it or not. In fact, even during the test, you'll know. Then you would continue for a third week if it's not gone yet.
To make sure that there aren't some that have just attenuated and they're weak, but they could come back to life. And if they come back to life, they'll probably come back even stronger. So you need to really make sure they're dead.
Yeah. So 2 weeks works for most people, but some people need it for three. That's the standard way it's given. So it's like an antibiotic. And, you know, antibiotic course is usually 2 weeks, similar, in that it should get rid of the bacteria rather quickly, just like antibiotics.
Is there good bacteria in the small intestine?
Absolutely. And in fact, at least one study, there's very few culture studies where they go in and culture the bacteria that are there overgrown in the small intestine, but one of them actually showed lactobacillus overgrown in SIBO. That was only one study. But, you know, it's not really about good versus bad. It's about that there's
Wait a minute. Lactobacillus overgrown?
You didn't want me to gloss over that one, huh?
No, because let's face it, the medical orthodoxy has finally gotten the message about probiotics. And we've talked about this on the show before. Taking probiotics may be a good thing if you're not feeding bad bacteria. It's the same thing with prebiotics. And so, all of the medical orthodoxy, they go for, VSL number 3, which is considered a medical food now and is prescribed by doctors. People with ileum pouch and IBS and so on, it is basically just lactobacillus and nothing else.
I think there's 5 strains in VSL. But, you know, here's the question bringing up this. Okay, so if it's possible to have good bacteria overgrown as part of your SIBO, then what everyone's question is it okay to take probiotics or not and eat probiotic-containing foods? And this is a controversial subject. There's no definitive answer, but I can give you my opinion. My general opinion is that it is okay because there have been 3 studies done on treating SIBO with just probiotics, and they all found success. I have those studies quoted in one of my articles you can find on my website.
Let's give that website. Oh. I'm so sorry. I've been remiss. SIBO Info, SIBOINFO.com. I apologize. I should have did that earlier.
That's it. And that's in my Townsend Letter article. I've quoted those studies for you there. But so because some studies have actually found that probiotics alone can reduce SIBO, I think it's okay. I really think it's okay. You know, I've taken a good hard look into all the mechanisms of action of how probiotics work in a positive way, and there's enough there to make me think it's okay to give it a go. But my caveat is that the majority of people, it may help. In fact, I think it helps, personally from my experience, I think it helps about 25% in most people. It's not a ton, but it's enough that who wouldn't want that extra bit of help? But there are outliers. So there are some people that they aggravate them, and I don't think it's just die-off. I really think it's not proper for some people. Mm-hmm. And then there are other people, they take probiotics, and they have a miracle cure. I have talked to the occasional person that used VSL-3 and like all their symptoms went away and never came back. And other probiotics too. So you have these outliers. Some people it's fantastic for, some people it's not good for, and most I think it's helpful.
You know, and the reason that we probably don't have a definitive answer here is because the entire digestive system and all of the lovely little grimy things that live in there day in and day out. It's been estimated to be like 4 pounds of microbiota that lines the inside of our digestive tract from our mouth down to our end point, let's say. We know nothing about it. It's like the rainforest, and we're going, hey, let's throw a handful of bluegrass seeds into the rainforest to see if any grass grows. It's like, how can you tell? There's a billion acres of foliage. You're going to be able to tell what happened when you threw a handful of seeds in there? I think it's
not enough.
Yeah,
it is. And I have to tell you something about this. Very exciting. We talked about this before the show started, that I've helped organize a SIBO symposium coming up this January. And at that symposium, Dr. Pimento, I keep mentioning he's one of the lead researchers on the subject, is actually going to present on just the topic you described. He has actually done studies mapping what is the bacteria that's in the small intestine, and he's going to present that to us all there.
And I've seen it. I saw a paper a while ago that estimated that I don't remember the numbers, but it was something like, X amount of years ago, we had 22,000 different types of colony-forming bacteria in our stomach, and today we have 2,000. And there's some discussion about, you know, what's going on with this microbiota, and are we losing some of the natively important microbiota throughout time for whatever reason, which comes to the discussion of diet again. So it seems to me that all of these problems arise when we eat these starchy foods. I would stand to be corrected, but I have to believe that people who have small intestinal bacterial overgrowth have the greatest problem digesting things like grains and legumes and starchy foods like that. Am I off base on that?
That's absolutely correct. And the reason why is because that's the favorite food of the bacteria.
Bingo.
That is their number one favorite food.
And it's the reason I bring this up is because in order for these little bastards to survive and flourish, and every time some good bacteria happens to die, they go, hey, take that space over there, is because we're feeding them an abundance of what they like.
Yes, but I do want to clarify something. I don't think that eating a grain-based starch diet can cause SIBO by itself. I don't believe that. And I have many patients that come to me saying that, going, oh, I ate all this, you know, crappy food, and so now I have SIBO. No, something else has to happen to disturb the physiology in the small intestine. Something has to happen to stop the proper motility. Either that, that's the primary cause, but either that or there's a physical obstruction. For instance, if there's cancer and there's a tumor obstructing the intestinal flow, well, then bacteria are going to back up behind it. So there are many reasons a person can get SIBO, but just eating starch is not enough. The issue here is that once you have it, that food is not going to be tolerated.
But what about the possibility of inoculation or infiltration? What about the possibility that we are consuming foods that have these bacteria? They ride along in the foods, and then they find a place to live in our small intestine, and they stay there.
That could happen, but I don't think they'll overgrow unless we have a failure of our protective mechanisms. And I think that's how SIBO really happens, is failure of protective mechanisms.
Well, we know that people suffer from all sorts of digestive problems today, and really, I have to look at the foods that we're eating that are part of the problem, because our digestive system was probably never prepared. Is there any evidence that eating a ketogenic diet has any effect on these little bastards, since they love all those sugars that we're consuming?
Yeah, so, you know, ketogenic diet is not really that far off from the main treatment diets, or it can be certainly easily adapted from the main treatment diets for SIBO. And those diets are the specific carbohydrate diet, the GAPS diet, and maybe a modified version of the FODMAP diet. So, you know, no one's really studied ketogenic per se with SIBO, but the general concept would apply that you need to be grain-free, you know, starch-free, reduce those carbohydrates in general. It's okay to have some simple carbohydrates like glucose or fructose if you don't have fructose malabsorption, because that can absorb so quickly and easily without it getting a chance to get to the bacteria. Hmm. If it got to the bacteria, they'd eat that too. Now, I'm not advocating a diet high in glucose or fructose.
Well, how about some occasional raw honey, which also has some nice enzymes and other things in it as well?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, you got to have some carbohydrates, for goodness sake. And that's really the issue with all these treatment diets, is that you know, any plant-based food at all is a possible food for the bacteria. So you're going to have to manipulate here and still keep yourself healthy with your own diet, but find a way to not be, you know, letting them chow down.
Okay, I want to take our last commercial break. I've got a couple more questions that I think will be intriguing. It's a really important discussion we're having here today with Dr. Allison Seebecker about small intestinal bacteria overgrowth. I have a feeling that even if you are asymptomatic, chances are over time this can happen to anybody. And the best thing to do is to try to find ways to avoid it from happening. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back.
He's exposing the man behind the curtain in the organic discussion.
Whole Foods is getting prepared for this onslaught of new customers by finding ways to fool them into buying things that aren't organic, thinking that they are, which is the way they led into the industry.
back in the day when people remember Whole Foods, there were people that are going in there and going, oh, well, this is all organic. I bought it at Whole Foods. And, oh, no, no, no. They do sell conventional stuff there. They do? Yeah.
Exposing the myths in our grocery stores.
And then Whole Foods started labeling it more clearly what was organic and what was conventional. But there was a whole period of time where people were buying what they thought was organic when it wasn't. And they were charging more. Whole Foods prices was a conventionally grown produce, similar price to what other stores were selling organic. And that made it even more confusing for the consumer. They thought, well, how could it be? I just paid $3.45 for a pound of apples. That's what that store sells organic. You're telling me I bought conventional apples? Yep, you did.
Carl Lenore on Superhuman Radio.
Extreme Formulations is the only company with a dairy protein product with a disclosed 50% whey to 50% micellar casein ratio. It's Ultra Peptide 2.0. It comes in 9 amazing flavors, including the newest lemon pie and butterscotch. Get free shipping on any order size inside the USA. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Ultra Peptide 2.0 banner ad now. Canadian listeners can also get free shipping on 2 or more jugs of Ultra Peptide 2.0. Don't wait too long because this special won't last. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad today.
If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
You already know that Whey Natural USA is the best whey protein powder from Amish grass pasture fed cows right here in the United States. Well, it's their second anniversary bonanza sale. Now you can get any number of 5 pound jugs of vanilla, chocolate, strawberry, or plain and save 20% when you use the coupon code ANNIV20. There's never anything artificial in Whey Natural USA. Sweetened with stevia and real cocoa, strawberry, or vanilla bean. It's the best, period. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Whey Natural USA banner ad today.
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com. For the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Tomorrow is Thursday, and the every other Thursday we have Adele Moussa on to perform the Subversity Science Roundup. We're going to be covering a topic that is going to be near and dear to a lot of the guys out there. It's about male pattern baldness. We're also going to talk about GABA. There's been a lot of discussion on Facebook about GABA, whether or not it passes the blood-brain barrier, what we can expect from it. Some people respond differently than others, so that'll be covered as well. But the male pattern baldness show should be pretty good, so tune in tomorrow for that. Okay, so Dr. Seebecker, what about raw foods? and I mean real raw foods, raw meat, raw dairy, completely raw, not only as a potential to mitigate some of the side effects, but even perhaps reestablish healthier microbiome.
Okay, this is an interesting question. There's two points I'd like to answer in that. So I think raw meat would be fine. Raw dairy, not so fine, because it still has the lactose in it. Even though it has lactase enzyme in it, it still has lactose. And I find SIBO people to be some of the most reactive to lactose because those little buggers can just go to town on it.
Yeah.
Raw nuts might be aggravating. Too much fiber. You know, raw fruits and vegetables, very aggravating. In SIBO, it's best if they're cooked and pureed, in fact, and peeled and de-seeded. So raw meat, yay. Maybe everything else, not so much.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's only until you get this overgrowth of bacteria out of the small intestine. Once it's out, the circumstance changes. But the second point I wanted to make is reestablishing, maybe getting in some really good bacteria. Now, we already kind of touched on this, which is I think it's okay to take probiotics, but it's just this interesting controversy of the main issue here for most people is a lack of the migrating motor complex, which is the motility of the small intestine specifically, not the large intestine. And if that isn't working right, I just don't think it's all about getting the right, it's not really about, getting the right bacteria in there. I think it's more about trying to repair these underlying mechanisms that allowed this overgrowth to happen. But, of course, I'm still completely in favor of taking probiotics. I am.
Are there ways to, I guess so, what that requires is to identify why you have this issue with food passing through your digestive system. It could be thyroid-related, it could be obstruction, it could be a variety of different things. And so, are there doctors out there who will do motility testing and identify why or whether or not food is moving too slow through you?
Yes. There's two tests you can do. One is not so obtainable. It's manometry. You'd have to go to a motility specialty center for that. There are definitely motility specialist doctors who do this testing. The one that's more commonly available is the gastric emptying test, and that can check how well your stomach is emptying. You said you experienced that problem yourself when you had some slow thyroid.
Right.
That's a fairly common test. That can be done. So, yes, seeing a gastroenterologist who specializes in motility can identify some of these things. Now, the problem is, let's say you have SIBO because you have diabetes. Diabetes often has gastroparesis. Gastroparesis is stomach paralysis, slow emptying of the stomach. And it comes together almost universally in diabetes. So then what? So, you know, what are you supposed to do then? Because you already
cure your diabetes. Look, let's be honest about diabetes for a second. If you're not type 1 diabetic, then you've acquired diabetes through your lifestyle. So reverse your diabetes.
That would be the goal. And now there are some conditions that don't seem to be reversible, like scleroderma. It's not that common. It's not as common as diabetes. But that one, there's not much hope. So you're just, in terms of reversal, so you're more managing.
Right.
But absolutely, the idea is trying to find the underlying cause. Now, if you have a moment, I can tell you about one of the most common underlying causes.
Please.
That's fascinating. But okay, are you sure? Because I know we're running out of time.
No. We'll go long if we have to.
Okay, so this is astounding work that's being done by Dr. Pimentel and his team. He's identified that the pretty much most common cause of SIBO is gastroenteritis, acute gastroenteritis. So this is stomach flu, food poisoning, traveler's diarrhea. These are the names it's known by. This, you know, you get an acute bout of vomiting, diarrhea. There's many ways you can get this, but in particular, he's talking about bacterial gastroenteritis. So this would be caused by E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella, Campylobacter, these types of bacteria. What he's been able to identify is that when these bacteria come in and give us this acute problem, they secrete a toxin. They also create a similar toxin. It's called CDT. And this toxin has a portion of it that looks very similar to a protein on one of our nerves in our small intestine.
Mm.
So you can probably already see where I'm going with this.
Yep.
What happens is through molecular mimicry or cross-reactivity, the immune system attacks our own small intestine nerves while it's attacking the toxin from the bacteria. So through an autoimmune-mediated process, we create nerve damage to our small intestine. That makes it so that we can't do the migrating motor complex properly. And this seems to be the underlying cause for so many people.
And that I have to believe is irreversible.
You have to believe it's, which, what did you say?
Irreversible. If you have nerve damage inside your small intestine, I can't believe that it's going to reverse itself.
That is the issue. Now, it seems to be that about 50% of people who have this occur to them, this is also called post-infectious IBS, and Dr. Pimentel has put forward this theory that post-infectious IBS is none other than SIBO. And so about 50% of people who get this condition spontaneously do heal, although it takes a long time, anywhere from 3 to 5 years. But then 50% don't, and so that's the people who it might not be reversible. But I can tell you that the researchers are working on that right now, and we're all just waiting. We're all just waiting for them to come out with an answer.
Any of us that went to a restaurant and got food poisoning, where we ended up, you know, vomiting and diarrhea and fever and cold chills, and it lasts, you know, generally a couple days at max, sometimes a little longer, we are at risk of having damage done to the nerves in our small intestine, which would predispose us to this problem later on in life.
Absolutely, and here's what's so scary about it, is that who hasn't had that?
Everyone's, I was just going to say, I'll tell you what's scary about it. Everybody in their lives has had it, you know.
Everybody. In fact, everybody's had it more than once. You know, so thankfully, you know, not all gastroenteritis is bacterial. Sometimes it's caused by other things. And not all bacteria come with a CDT toxin, even though they can all secrete it. There are some mutant forms that don't have it. So, or maybe we're just lucky. Not everybody who gets gastroenteritis goes on to get post-infectious IBS. There's studies of towns where municipal water has been contaminated, and they can see that the rate of post-infectious IBS is, it's got a big range, but some say around 10%, some say a little higher. So a vast majority of people, when they get gastroenteritis, don't go on to get post-infectious IBS for various reasons. Thank God. Thank God. But
yeah, I've had it twice. I've had it twice in my life, and I can tell you the restaurants. I ate at Mickey's on St. Patrick's Day on on Queens Boulevard, and had corned beef and cabbage, and it was so sick for 2 days. I passed out from vomiting and diarrhea. I became dehydrated. And once again, I took some clients out to the Cheesecake Factory in L.A., and that night, I mean, it hit me. It was like, oh, my God. And I was so sick, I had to go to the hospital and be rehydrated.
Exactly. So these are prime cases. I mean, I would say the majority of my patients tell me stories like this. And a lot of the times it is traveling in other countries when they get exposed, and since then they've never been well. Or maybe they were okay for a little while and then it came on a little bit afterwards. But the damage does seem to be cumulative. So, you know, many, many bouts. You might have had a couple of times as a child, maybe as a teen, maybe as an adult, but it wasn't until this last one, now you're not well since. Well, that's because the damage is cumulative.
Well, and here's another thing. I don't know if this means anything. I'm asking you. I'm really regular. Food goes through me in 24 hours. If I can tell you that what I had for breakfast this morning will be out of me tomorrow morning. And just that, I mean, I'm just that regular. And I know, because sometimes there's remnants of certain foods that you eat that show up when you examine, you know, what's left behind. And I can tell you. So what about a charcoal test? I know that you can eat charcoal capsules and then look for it in your bowel movement to identify how fast or how slow food is going through you. Is that something that people can do as a first line step in determining the motility through their digestive tract?
Yeah, that seems like a simple at home thing you can do just to give yourself a sense. I sometimes wonder about a test like that if it's really going to reflect small intestine motility.
Yeah, because you could have the small intestine slowing down, but everything connected to it's moving faster, and so the net result is, oh, I'm regular, I'm fine.
That's exactly my concern. Yeah. What if it went real slow through the small intestine, and then as soon as it hit the large intestine, it came out almost right away? Then you'd think everything was normal. So, you know, maybe it's not perfect, but I see no problem with giving it a go just to get a sense.
And it seems to me that using the elemental diet might be a prophylactic that people can do for 2 or 3 weeks out of their lives. We're already talking about how getting ketone levels up above one, I guess, millimole per liter, I guess, is the way they measure it. I'm not sure. I could be wrong about this. We're going to talk about it on the seminar. There's a doctor in California that says that once you get above that one level, staying there for 5 to 8 days can actually kill any developing cancer in your body. And so I'm thinking, wow, I'm going to do that once a year. If as a prophylactic, I'll do that, you know?
I mean, this is something that's really interesting to me because, you know, if it can kill cancer, could it possibly? Is it antimicrobial? I don't know.
Well, no, I don't, no, it's not because a cancer needs cancer cannot run on ketones. Period. End of story. Everything else in the body can run on ketones, but cancer. So you're basically nourishing and feeding everything else in the body except cancer. But with the bacteria in the gut, I'm sure that it can switch over if it needs to from time to time or find other things
kind
to
of,
eat.
Yeah, I kind of think so. Yeah, they're so wily. I think you might be right about that.
Yeah, they've evolved to survive. You know what I mean?
They sure have. And they can eat fat and protein.
There you go. Well, that's it. That's it. So I don't think a ketone diet may be the answer for that. But what I am saying is the elemental diet for 2 weeks out of your life wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, especially if it helps to control almost as a prophylactic diet, control the potential overgrowth of SIBO. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's only one drawback to it that I've seen with the commercial formulas. They're pretty high carbohydrate, and people who already have some yeast problems, it can aggravate those yeast problems because the yeast can go after that.
Well, I see an opportunity for a very, very smart company to come out. I mean, look, you can blend amino acids and make an entire protein out of them. You can find a better slow carbohydrate source than maltodextrin between you and I. I mean,
exactly.
I'd have to see oatmeal flour might even be better. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. But I see an opportunity for a company who already makes MRPs, meal replacement powders, to come up with something like this.
I completely agree with you. I've actually asked companies to develop products like this, and at least one that I know is working on it, but it's a long time coming.
Listen, this is an exciting discussion. I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. The website, again, is SIBO, S-I-B-O, info, I-N-F-O, .com. You can go there and find all sorts of great information. If you currently have IBS, you have some sort of gastric distress, you suffer from bloating, gassiness, you know, every time you eat something, you're burping for hours. Keep matches away from your mouth, obviously, until you're tested to find out just how much methane you're spitting out. Go to SIBO, S-I-B-O, info, I-N-F-O, .com today. Thank you so much, Dr. Seebecker.
Oh, thank you so much, Carl.
Take care. All right, so there you have it. Another great show has been completed. We also want to thank Dr. Stephen Guyanet, for coming on and talking about hypothalamic inflammation and its role in obesity. You can learn more about what he's doing along with Dan Pardee at dansplan.com. And we'll see everybody tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in.
There's something comforting about knowing he's out there.
Government is in place because it assumes that people are too stupid to care for themselves.
By your side.
Government has to take up the parental role of teaching people what to do.
Fighting the good fight.
Government has to get out of people's pantries, first of all. They can't legislate health.
He's Carl Lenore on Super Human Radio.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.